Welcome back, everybody, to the Global Intelligence Knowledge Network Weekly Intelligence Wrap-Up, Season 1, Episode 2. This podcast is being recorded for the week of March 29th, 2024. I'm Neil Bisson, a retired intelligence officer with the Canadian Security Intelligence Service and the director of Global Intelligence Knowledge Network. I've worked in a combination of intelligence and law enforcement for about over 25 years, so with this podcast series, what I'm trying to do is to cut through some of the obfuscation that news media provides and start to look at it through a lens of a former intelligence professional to give you a better understanding of what happens in the shadowy world of spies and sometimes their lies that can affect everything from politics and economics to personal safety and national security. So if you enjoy this podcast and you like what you hear, please subscribe. In today's episode, I'll discuss some significant developments in cybersecurity and espionage that occurred over the last week. So our first story comes from the U.S. State Department, who this week revealed that an indictment charge is up against seven nationals of the People's Republic of China, associated with Advanced Persistent Threat 31. APT 31 is a Chinese hacking group with conspiracy to commit computer intrusions and wire fraud. The indictment exposes a sophisticated cyber espionage campaign orchestrated by the Chinese government, targeting critics of China, U.S. businesses, and political figures. APT 31 is believed to operate under the direction of the PRC, Ministry of State Security, and has conducted extensive hacking operations for approximately 14 years, where they targeted thousands of individuals and entities globally. This indictment highlights the scale and scope of the cyber attacks, which included sending over 10,000 malicious emails to victims worldwide. These emails, disguised as legitimate news articles, contained hidden tracking links, and once opened, the Chinese hacking group gained access to sensitive information, including IP addresses and network details, facilitating further targeted hacking. Among the targets were journalists, political officials, and companies critical of the Chinese regime. APT 31 also targeted government officials and election campaign staff in the United States, as well as individuals supporting dissident movements, such as activists behind the Hong Kong Umbrella Movement. The indictment underscores the use of some very sophisticated hacking techniques, including zero-day exploits, which were able to gain and maintain access to the victim's network. It reveals instances of successful compromises of email accounts, cloud storage, and telephone call records, lasting years in some cases. Additionally, APT 31 targeted U.S. companies operating in critical sectors like defense, telecommunication, and finance, aiming to steal trade secrets and intellectual property. Their actions contributed to significant economic losses for American businesses. Notably, the indictment sheds light on the broader strategy of Chinese government to stifle dissent both domestically and internationally, using cyber espionage and transnational repression tactics. This indictment serves as a reminder of the persistent threat posed by state-sponsored cyber actors like APT 31. And the importance of a robust cybersecurity measure. As the U.S. intelligence community warns its potential interference in the upcoming elections and maintaining high vigilance against such malicious activities remains paramount. This goes not only for government departments, but also companies and citizens as well. There's a lot of helpful information out there online available regarding how you can prevent becoming a victim of a cyber hack, cyber crime, or cyber espionage. One of the easiest ways is to continue to update your computer software as soon as updates become available and ensure your passwords are difficult to crack and aren't used for multiple logins. Also, using multi-factor authorization whenever possible is a great way to try to keep from being hacked. And our second news story, the podcast takes us into the realm of international intrigue and other security concerns. In a case that spans immigration, national security, and allegations of cyber espionage, a former lecturer at a Chinese university finds himself at the center of a legal battle in Canada. Hu Jixu, a 43-year-old Chinese national, arrived in Canada in 2021 under permanent resident visa obtained through his wife's sponsorship. However, upon arrival, he was detained by the Canadian Border Services Agency on suspicion of affiliations with organizations engaged in espionage activities. As a former Border Service officer who then went out to work as an intelligence officer with CSIS, I can't express enough the importance of these two government departments being on the same page when it comes to national security. Traditionally, CBSA was focused on the improper and illegal importation of goods. But with the incorporation of immigration into customs in the 1990s, the concern over who is coming to Canada and who possesses a national security threat has never been more important. But we'll get back to this a little bit later. So, talking about Xu, his background adds complexities to the current IRB case. With 20 years of service in the People's Liberation Army, including a rank of lieutenant colonel, Xu transitioned into teaching at the People's Liberation Army's Information Engineering University. This is known as China's premier military academy for cyber and electronic warfare. The real issue here is whether or not this individual's role at the university implicates him in cyber espionage directed against Canada. While Canadian authorities have argued that Xu's employment at that university aligns him with units of PLA responsible for cyber espionage, Xu maintains that his role was merely that of a lecturer, comparing it to that of a janitor or a cook. Now, in the previous story, the State Department of the U.S. showed just how China is on cyber espionage campaigns against the West. Despite previous decisions favoring Xu's admission into Canada, the federal court has ordered a new immigration hearing, citing flaws in previous assessments and calling for a reevaluation of Xu's case by a different panel. This case highlights the challenges faced by CBSA and the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, CSIS, when dealing with immigration national security matters. Individuals applying to enter Canada will always portray themselves in the best light. And if they are somehow associated to a group, organization, or government department that poses a threat to national security, they will most likely try to downplay that role and the participation in that entity. Okay, so why would you provide information about his role in the PLA and a university that focuses on cyber warfare in the first place? Well, likely it's because he felt that his work at the PLA and at the university wouldn't be looked upon as being a negative factor. As strange as this sounds, individuals from countries of concern regarding national security issues still maintain a level of pride in their achievements. Likewise, they may feel that their work makes them more sought after as an educated, patriotic citizen of their former country. So even if that patriotism is for a foreign state that engages in massive cyber espionage. Additionally, individuals with military backgrounds who apply to Canada or other Western countries don't usually discuss this action with their superiors for fear of being considered anti-patriotic. So he's not going to go and tell anybody else that he works with, hey, guess what? I'm applying to go live in Canada. However, this does lead to a bigger concern. Usually those individuals seeking access to Western countries who are actively working for a foreign state will not indicate their affiliations, but if they do indicate their affiliations and they're told to go ahead with it, they're more than likely doing it with the purpose of providing information back to that foreign state. Like I just said, this doesn't preclude you from being a potentially highly dangerous national security risk. Like we have seen in the case of the two scientists who were fired in Winnipeg from the biolab, who only decided that they would move back to China and start lives under a different name. They were also associated with Chinese military, academia, and science and technology firms. And this information that they provided was more than likely and continues to be exploited by the PRC.
Which segues nicely into our next story, which just happens to be about two infectious disease scientists, the Canadian citizen Zhongguo Qi and Kending Cheng. Both were once prominent figures at Canada's high security national microbiology laboratory and have now resurfaced in China under pseudonyms, all amidst an ongoing RCMP probe into their activities. Since their departure from the lab in Winnipeg in 2019, Dr. Kui and Mr. Cheng have been operating under new identities, Sandra Chiu and Keiting Cheng, while actively engaging in research at prestigious institutions in China. Records reveal that Sandra Chiu, believed to be Dr. Kui, has been collaborating with researchers from the People's Liberation Army, including working at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, focusing on antibodies for coronavirus and deadly viruses like Ebola and Nipah. While Keiting Cheng, likely Mr. Cheng, has been identified as a top immunology scientist at King Med Diagnostics and has been associated with various academic institutions in China. So former CSIS director Richard Fadden has emphasized the couple's attempts to conceal their activities, indicating potential alignment with Chinese interests. Notably, declassified documents suggest that Dr. Kuo's involvement in Chinese talent programs aimed at enhancing the country's technological capabilities, which raises concerns about the intellectual property theft and economic espionage that they likely engaged in while they were in the Winnipeg lab. Despite the mounting evidence against them, neither Dr. Kuo nor Mr. Cheng have responded to requests for comment by the media, which continues to leave many unanswered questions in this investigation. The story is almost a bookend to the prior one concerning Hu Jishu. If we could turn back the clock in regard to the immigration applications of Kuo and Cheng, would we also see a highly qualified potential immigrant seeking to one day acquire citizenship in Canada and hopefully obtain a high-level clearance position in their area of expertise? No one who works for law enforcement, intelligence, or border services has a crystal ball to peer into to see if a potential applicant for status in Canada is a national security threat in the future. But Canada is seeing how Chinese government operates when it comes to cyber espionage and the theft of intellectual property. Hopefully it's not too late to prevent future national security threats from entering the country or obtaining access to sensitive areas of research and technology. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Global Intelligence Knowledge Network Weekly Intelligence Wrap-Up. Thanks for listening. If you like the show and have comments or suggestions, please share them. Listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or just ask your smart speaker for Global Intelligence Knowledge Network Weekly Intelligence Wrap-Up. If you enjoy all things espionage and intelligence and you're looking for more content like this, you can go to my YouTube channel, Global Intelligence Knowledge Network Inside Intelligence, where you can see videos on everything from situational awareness to terrorism and cryptocurrency and how spies use tombstone data to build legends. Additionally, there's plenty of content at www.globalintelligenceknowledgenetwork.com. Don't forget to join me and two other former spies, Phil Gursky and Al Tredenick, on the podcast Spies Like Us. As always, stay curious, stay safe, and stay informed.